The following Dharma encounter with Ron Hogan Green Sensei took place at Zen Mountain Monastery at the conclusion to a week-long meditation session. As you'll hear, Dharma encounters begin with the introduction of a topic related to Zen practice and training. Students then volunteer to present their understanding of the topic or a question for the Dharma encounter teacher to reflect on. The presence of fellow students means that anyone in attendance can benefit from the exchange. We hope you enjoy.
This is Dharma Encounter, as you know. And very briefly, this has a history going back to the time of the Buddha, where the Buddha and the senior teachers would interact with the Sangha with questions. And that continues through India, China, Korea, Japan, and here. Dharma Encounter is face-to-face. It's similar than Daisan, Doksan, which of course is private and generally confidential. And here we do it openly so that we can all contribute by listening, by coming up, by hearing, by learning. The focus in Dharma Encounter is to, as directly as possible, help the student to go deep within themselves, to hopefully be on the path of realizing their original face. And sometimes it's with direct pointing, and sometimes it's more conceptual. Depends on the questions that are brought up and where the student is. But the intent is always to be as direct as possible. Today it also functions, because this is the second of three Dharma encounters during Ango. And next month, the chief disciple, Taisho, will be taking the high seat and lead the Sangha in an encounter, part of the journey of becoming a senior student. That includes us all. The encounter is unrehearsed. Nobody knows what I'll be offering, and I don't know what you'll be offering when you come up. And so that gives it an energy and a vitality that makes it alive and worthwhile. So I'll introduce the general topic and provide some kind of supporting information that you're already familiar with to one extent or another, and then bring forth the question. We only have one today, and invite you to come up. Just in preparation, I want to say at the onset that I'd like to invite initially Jikai students who have not had a chance in the past two Angos to come up. So let's allow for that. And then when they've come up, the monitors will help us with anyone else who wishes to come up. So we've been working the Sangha with the Bodhisattva path and the paramitas. The Bodhisattva path is the practice of bodhicitta. And if I were to define bodhicitta in its most direct sense, it's simply saving all beings, starting with yourself and extending onward. And saving all beings is really interesting because if you're like me, and I think most people, we come to this practice because we want to save ourselves. We're hurting. We see hurting in others, but we're concentrated on ourselves. And someplace along the line, we begin to realize that we can't deeply address our pain, our suffering, our separation, without beginning to address that of others. Because we're slowly realizing there are no others amidst the others. And so it's an interesting cycle. We have to start with ourselves in practice, and we have to, through our practice and insight, naturally there comes an extension to other beings, all other beings, which affects us and our own insight, and further makes it obvious to us that we want to save all beings. And we are all beings. That's what's being realized. So, Shantideva says the bodhisattva path is the practice of bodhicitta, saving all beings. He says it has two aspects. Bodhicitta, the awakening mind, first aspire bodhicitta in intention. So we all do that. We take the vows, we take them every day to save all beings. And that kind of sets us in a particular direction, makes it familiar to us. We hear it 1,000,000 times. We do it 1,000,000 times. And the energy of that comes alive in us. Then, active bodhicitta, which is practical engagement. So there is an aspiration, and then there is setting out on the path. The wise and learned thus should understand, he says, that the difference is ordered and progression and progressive. So there's a natural progression to this, from coming into practice with your concern focused on yourself, and that's why you come to practice generally. And yes, we are aware of others, but we start with ourselves. And until there's some clear clarity in our own practice, which then opens up, we can, in a deeper and more profound way, begin to appreciate that our self is all selves, manifesting as this self and as that self. And so if we want to help, if we want to live our vow, then we have to include everybody. The other part of that is the paramitas. So I'll bring that forth just very briefly. There's a lot you can say about each one. Generosity, dana paramita. Dogen says that giving is as natural and as common as breathing. We can't avoid giving to others, and we cannot avoid being given by others. Every breath that you take, every step you take, every piece of clothing, every piece of food, every moment of your life you're being given to by others. And you're given. Shugan Roshi talked yesterday about trees, how they take in the carbon dioxide that we breathe out, which of course, at a certain level, is poisonous and has many other effects that we're probably aware of. And they convert that to oxygen, which is, in effect, our lifeblood. And we breathe out carbon dioxide. Giving, receiving. Are they one or are they two? That's you and me. So since we can't avoid it, we might as well realize the reality of how life works. This is how life works. We're always giving and we're always receiving. And the question is, what are we giving and what are we receiving? Dogen writes in the Bandoa, we open our hand and it is filled. Generosity. Ethical conduct, the precepts, is discipline. It took me a while in practice to get that. They actually had to step back from my desires. Oh, I can practice and do zazen. But at a certain point, I realized that although zazen nourished me, it was essential, I was missing something. And I was missing by staying within my reluctance to give anything up. Can I keep me in my selfish, self-centered desires and still practice and be a bodhisattva? How's that working for you, Hogan? So it's a practice of renunciation. But it's just not a rule. Don't kill, for example, the first precept. The other side is cherish all life. And each of the precepts is that. The two sides that become one side. Joyful effort, or virya. I've always personally prized that because in my life it's always been accessible. It's a commitment to helping you and I awaken while letting go of a task-driven grimness. And that's an interesting thing, because along with the energy of a goal can come a certain grimness, which is, of course, self-responsible, self-directed, habitual, blind. The very thing that gets you the goal destroys the goal. Isn't that interesting? Patience. A profound patience that ultimately rests in opening our arms to this limitless moment. But how about when we're stuck in a long line of cars and it's taken forever? And the lights change and they change and they change and you haven't moved. What's patience then? Maybe it makes common sense to move to another line or just leave. Maybe it doesn't. It's up to you. The patience is yours. The practice is yours. And there's much more beyond that. Because all of us are going to encounter situations in our life in which the only parameter we deeply have available to us is patience. Being present with it. Meditative concentration, zazen. The practice of realization. That's what we're practicing. And wisdom, prajna. A fundamental wisdom arises from the insight that on one hand there isn't a single thing, and on the other hand we can come forth and live out of not a single thing amidst all the things. How do you manifest that in the relative world? Not a single thing, and yet here we all are and are. What's the wisdom of seeing enormous suffering in our actions in this world? So the question, I think it's pretty obvious at this point. How do you go straight down an ever-twisting path? with the support of the Bodhisattva path and the paramitas. That's what it rests on. The Bodhisattva path and the paramitas. And by implication, bodhicitta. And this, in a direct way, faces all of us, each of us. And you know, we don't want to get any grades on it, but we sure do get karma, which is immutable. And as I get older, I see that. Seldom in the way that A goes to B, goes to C. It's not so simple. It's extraordinarily complex. And in its own strange way, it's completely just. So, I invite people to come up, starting with Jhakai students who have not been up or not been up in a while. Taisho will start. She'll do three bows. Everyone else will do one bow. And we'll see together where this takes us. I'm eager to hear what you have to say.
So, John Chi, straight and curved co-arise. One can't be without the other. There's no straight is only straight because curved, and vice versa. If you just are where you are, you are where you are. There's no straight or curved. And I take that where I find that alive in the pain of the world is on, you know, it's one of those topics where he says it's the third rail, you don't want to touch it. But on the day after election, I don't care what the result is, we will have all lost because the world will be at war with itself. It'll be divided. There'll be pain on one side or the other. There'll be frustration on one side or the other. That's not winning. That's not curing the pain of the world, the suffering of the world. We talk about things co-arising, and we might think, oh, the other side have their separate co-arising. They somehow co-arose on their own, and I co-arose on my own. But we co-arose together. I helped create the world that created them, and they helped create the world that created me. We're tied, we're straight and curved. And so we have to find the way to meet just present, and that's hard.
So what is your response personally to this?
Is to feel that I'm responsible for those moments of my own arrogance where I thought less of another person, where I thought of another person as my enemy, as someone to be gotten rid of, to be converted to my way, my thought. To not respect them, to not be interested in their story, not to be interested in their pain. I don't care. You're racist. I'm going to spend time listening to you. Versus just saying, I get it. I get what it feels like to just be angry with another side. And if I'm that other side, I need to receive that anger. I need to breathe it in and breathe out love. And that love needs to be listening. Up comes that, I really don't like your side. And you just need to let that go. And you got to keep aware that what you're responsible for is that you have a human being in front of you and that we're joined. We help create each other. So how do we fix this? How can I meet you and see you?
But I refuse to meet you. I'm going to punch you in the nose, which actually happened at a polling this week. So what are you going to do then?
7 times knocked down, 8 times got up.
Okay, may your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanji, every moment I'm slamming into the guardrails.
Is that the statement?
Yes.
Well, good. It's a good place to begin. Why?
I see myself so much wanting to just put the car on cruise control, let it go straight. But yet, when I turn, it's more alive. But there's so much resistance to being alive.
Yeah. So what do you do with your resistance? I mean, you can just die. I don't mean physically. I mean emotionally, responsively.
Joyful effort.
But what does that mean? So it almost sounds like I have to take this thing called joy and paste it over my face.
There's this uncomfortable feeling. Let it in. Yes.
Are you actually willing to do that?
Sometimes.
Truthful person is hard to find. Sometimes. So there's the work. And that work starts with a desperate sensitivity to when you're asleep. Not with self-judgment, self-hatred, putting yourself down, but with a deep faith that no matter what your mind is giving you habitually, the thoughts that you know so well, that you can work, it's workable. What makes it workable?
I do.
Yeah, but what specifically?
That everything's, nothing's fixed. I'm not fixed.
Yeah. You're not fixed. Why not?
Because the fixed is the straight that I think it should be. That the concept of who I am, where I'm going.
Yeah. Sometimes walking down a crooked path, you get the joy of bumper cars. If you allow it, there's no self-judgment. And sometimes walking down a straight path, okay. It's not all that interesting, but okay. Either way is fine, ultimately. But are we hurting people? In the name of walking down a straight path or bumping, hurting ourselves? So it requires on your part, not just there's a problem and I want to put a Band-Aid on it. It requires something more. What does it require?
Completely not turning away.
That's right. That's called bodhicitta. That's what it requires. A complete commitment to yourself in the larger sense of the word. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanji. oh, how boring it would be if it were all predictable anyway. Mm-hmm. How do I go straight? Together. With my ancestors, with my Sangha, with my heart, with your heart. One moment at a time, it's all I got. Try and bring that. Try to keep it alive. Feeling the energy of each other when we bump into each other, when we laugh with each other. It's getting easier to show up.
What does showing up mean?
Many things.
Yes.
Many things. For me, lately, showing up has meant leaving a career and a profession of 18 years and returning to my original nursing profession. Showing up means, good morning, sir. How are you feeling today? How am I going to, I try to treat each patient. They're me. They're my grandmother. They're my grandfather. How would I want them treated? How would I want to be treated?
I don't want your good morning. Go away.
Well, that happens three times a day at least. I still understand. You must be in a lot of pain. I'm going to try and make this as quick as possible. Can I get you anything? I'm sorry I have to start this IV. I know it's going to hurt. How are you with needles? What can I do to make this a little bit more comfortable for you?
So, bumpy road, curves, or straight?
Yep.
May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So Sanji, Hogan, my brother. Wow, this is big.
Long time no see.
Yeah, exactly. To walk a straight path on a crooked way, I don't think I can. I don't think I want to. There was a time when I thought I was a victim. And I realize I'm not that anymore. That's the mind of a slave. I wake up, I try to engage my life, engage the people I run into, even engage my fears. And I have quite a few. And fall, this color, this love that wakes up into me because of this season. It's hard not to appreciate when I look into your eyes a deep, deep, deep mystery that I've been invited into. And the older I get, I marvel at what I've been invited to take part in. And even though I'm closer to the end than I was, let's say, to the beginning, I'm enjoying things more than ever, even though I'm living in a very insane time. So how do I handle both of those? I think Suzuki Roshi once said, there are no enlightened beings, just enlightened moments. And hopefully I can partake in more of those than not.
So, in 3 weeks, all the trees will be dirt on the leaves. Overcast. It's damn cold. Mm. You don't have any hair at all.
Here today, gone tomorrow.
What will you do then? And I'm not talking about the weather here.
Well, not to lose my breath, but you know, there's so much challenges for me to look at and still maintain calm in the midst of chaos. I'm Arabic, and from what I see in the Middle East, just, I just can't believe it. So in the midst of all this that I call Keith's existence, and from all that I've listened to in the 25 years that I've been coming here off and on, I'm amazed that I can maintain some sense of stability. Because when you take it all in, the good and the bad, it's such a marbled existence when you really start to feel all that there is going on. You know, the wonder of the trees creating leaves and then they drop. I used to have hair, I don't, it's gone. I used to have eyesight, and it's not as good as it used to be.
And that's the short list.
That's a short list. Well, let's keep this not that real. But, you know, it's, look at it, look at it. We're living, we're so fortunate to be living here, you know, middle class. I don't hurt for anything as far as needs. My biggest problem is trying to understand what I need to do in order to maintain health and sanity. I mean, it's all there. I know it all, what I need to do. It's simply a matter of quit whining, Keith.
How about the old cynicism?
The what?
The old cynicism.
Yeah. I mean, that's a friend of mine that slaps me around when you get to feel it the moment after you partake in it. You know, that's that curve along the road that, you know, you're pulling on the wheel because, you know, if you go straight, that cynicism is going to knock you off that road. And since that road has been traveled before, it's not as if... It's not as if I don't know better.
And in that way, when the thought of cynicism is there, it helps you.
You know, when there was a time when I hated my father, and then I came here and realized why my father was the way he was, and then why I am the way that I am, and then I forgave him, and on the path of forgiving myself, which then allows me to feel more deeply about every moment that seems to unfold.
Thank you. I've walked that path. May your life go well.
Thank you.
Great smile, Sasanji. I'd like to ask you about the image and the energy of the hermit in relationship to the precepts and being more engaged in the world and not withdrawing from it. Because on the one hand, it seems like there's a contradiction. You know, you say we begin this practice sort of concerned with ourselves, right? And then the world does become larger, right? Whether it's family or community or politics or the environment or... and yet you have this image of the hermit, which is very attracting to me.
You better get on it if that's where you want to go.
Don't tempt me now. but I'm talking more about the energy of the spirit. You know, the chances are I'm not going to just get a little cabin. You know, because I have been spending more time alone and very much appreciating it. And it just creates this dilemma, you know, mm-hmm. because it does feel entitled in some way, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to be a hermit in this day and age and really have that, you know, sometimes very joyous moments alone.
And when we come here for a week, that's not entitled?
No, that's entitled too.
That's what?
That's entitled too.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So how do you rationalize that?
Well, I'm just doing all I know how to do, I think, in order to, in terms of the saving all sentient beings.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
It's I don't know how I got here, really.
Yeah. None of us do, Wilt.
But, you know, I do what I can do.
To truly be a hermit, I mean, I'm comfortable being alone, and I enjoy my time alone. But to truly be a hermit is a calling. And to that person, it makes perfect sense. That's their calling, in a sense, that's who they are. And they're giving their all to that. Now, someone like you or me may come along and say, how is that helping the world? And I would say, how is Shugan Roshi helping the world? He's out with all us, has to listen to all our crap. How's he helping the world? Each of us is called, when bodhicitta comes alive in us, to do what us, this person, needs to do as this person, a Buddha, to help save all sentient beings. Everything matters. Everything matters. You know, there's, like all centers and monasteries, we have circles of people who are interested in help and contribute and practice. So students are at the heart of it, obviously, but there's a number of circles. There's people who support the monastery who will never be here, have never been here, and perhaps never practiced. But what they're doing is what they think they can do to help. That's each of our responsibility. That's your responsibility, my responsibility. I know I'm not a hermit, and I'm not called to be a hermit, but I sure am called to do hermitages. And that's my responsibility. And so you have to respect yours in the context of your life, which I can't know and no one else ultimately can know. That makes sense to your age and situation and finances and responsibilities to others. And it is not free. Believe me, you know this. It is not free. Whatever choice you're going to make, mm-hmm. it is not free.
Right.
There's a karma from it. And some of it is painful. It's yours. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanji, I think my answer to the question is step by step being aware that at every moment I have a choice, that at every moment I am shaping the world that I'm in. And I come back to that constantly. At the same time, I find myself, even as I feel my practice deepening, I find myself, if anything, actually becoming more cynical about humanity. Individually, people are fine. You know, groups like this, great. But I think there was a time in my life where, I don't know, I was just, I don't know if I was more naive, I don't know what I was. I was a lot of things, but Increasingly, I just find myself like really kind of down on people. I can look around and see why that is, but like, I wish it were not so. But there it is, and I don't really understand it, especially in the context of my practice and my ability to meet people, increasingly better able to meet people where they are, including some really difficult people, like my family members, who are like the most difficult.
Oh, I thought you were talking about me.
Well, there's that too. So I don't know. I don't know where that's coming from, but it feels sort of disturbing to me. And maybe it's just, you know, because you'll always say, like, it's always been this way. You know, we haven't always had a front row seat like we do now because everything's live streamed, but it's always been this way. So maybe it's just that recognition and like grappling, you know, like there isn't that sense of like, we can just make it better. We can have a better world. We can just get rid of, you know, the bad, not people, but like the bad things, you know? And increasingly, I guess I feel like it's just our lot as humans to just replay this same old shit over and over and over again.
Well, the Buddha said that.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess that settles it then.
But what's the but?
The but is we have this practice, and the but is the Eightfold Path, and the but is the precepts, and the but is everything we do every day.
So that's the aspiration, so to speak. On the road, you know, there's a term sometimes used in Buddhism about enemies, which I find useful to recognize people who live a life where they're, from my perspective as a practicing Buddhist, they're creating evil. What about them?
What about them?
Saving all sentient beings.
Right.
Oh, I got it. Saving all sentient beings. Couple of footnotes at the bottom, though.
Yeah. No, we talked about, you know, wishing enlightenment for other people before ourselves. If I could have Benjamin Netanyahu and Vladimir Putin and, you know, any number of people enlightened before me, I'd be happy. That would be great.
But you can't.
But I can't.
Right. So what can you do? What's the karma?
Yeah.
I'm going to use a particular word here. It may not exactly fit, but it's pretty close. Of within the Buddhist practice, a Zen practice, authentic Zen practice, of hating your enemies. So what are your options? They are enemies.
Yeah. I get so angry. I don't feel like I hate anybody. Like, I can genuinely say that. Like, I don't feel like I hate anybody. I feel like...
You're communicating that. I just want you to understand that. But go on.
I'm communicating what? That I hate them or that I don't hate them? That I do? Okay.
Something approximating that. A very strong negative emotion. Yes.
Anger. Yes. There's a lot of anger there.
Okay. Hate, anger.
Yeah.
They're both violence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it not appropriate to be angry at, you know, people who cause suffering? I mean, and I know I just walked into a trap. Because I know I cause suffering.
Congratulations. See, the training works.
I mean, like, I don't know, that level of suffering, I know, it's, yeah.
Yeah. So think about that. It doesn't have to be love as we ordinarily understand it. It doesn't have to be hate. So how recognizing that we encounter people who create evil. It's too strong to say they are evil. But in a sense, another sense, we can understand that every action they do seems to be directed to that. So where do you find yourself in that? In recognizing that? Are there other things to recognize around that? In you? In them?
Sure.
What are they?
You're asking me right now, like, what are they? I mean, you know, and this is kind of an old trope as well, but it's true that, like, that anger in myself, you know, that anger in myself relates to, you know, I see these people sometimes and the harm that they cause, and, like, you know, there's a part of me that can relate to that. There's a part of me that can relate to just wanting to just, like, punch the fuck out of the people who you feel are doing something wrong. The only problem is then, you know, we see where that goes.
So you've heard me use the term many times, turn everything to the Dharma.
Yeah.
So you can recognize the hell, the hating of somebody, and you can recognize that and say, how can that help me save all beings, them not excluded? How?
Yeah. Because sometimes you can use that relating. And I'm thinking of one client who has, like, a lot of anger issues. And, like, we have a great time together. And, like, he's done great work and we've done great work together. But, like, I can meet
him. You can relate. That's why. Well, we all can. But the question remains, how do you turn it towards the Dharma, which isn't a set-piece answer? It's an exploration within you so that you don't create. I mean, what's the karma of hating evil?
Right. It's creating more hate and more evil, yeah.
So let's not do that. That's how we got in this mess in the first place.
Right.
So there you go. That needs inspection internally. It needs care. Needs gentleness, needs love.
Yeah.
Needs a willingness to go down a curved road and bang into the curves. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanchi. I'm trying to avoid shortcuts these days. That's how I'm trying to go straight down a curved path. In a confused way, I am excellent. I have excellent vision at seeing where the road goes, seeing where I think the road is going to go, and taking shortcuts. I'm trying to stop.
You're trying not to see where the road goes?
Yeah. Not in the way I usually do.
Although we're talking in metaphor, is there any sense that you've never known where the road goes?
What comes up is right now in my life.
Yeah, well, that comes up right now, but that kind of is dodging the question.
Is it? Maybe I'm not understanding the question.
The next moment, you could be dead. Do you really understand that?
Slowly.
Where's the road then? The curves, straight. That has always been there. That always will be there. Right up until the moment, the next moment you're dead. So, consider that the metaphor is a stand-in for our mind. And can we at least sometimes give permission to be stupid? May your life go well.
Thank you for this teaching.
Shosanji, the question that keeps coming up for me and it doesn't go away. When I came into practice, so I was an artist, and I took that somehow, like that was too self-serving and kind of not just because of practice, but circumstances, like my life exploded in different directions. And so I feel like so many people come to our farm, so many people appreciate it, and I do so much to make it happen. And I don't know how to keep doing it. Like, I don't know how to pull back, and I'm so tired.
Yeah. It's hard to face yourself when you are not fully accepting the drives that's pushing you towards pain and delusion.
That's what I want to hear, because I know that there's something that I'm hanging on to that's making me unable to actually see, like, the change I know has to come inside before I can make it manifest outside. But I don't still really see it. Yeah.
You don't see what?
I guess I have a sense. That was great to me that you just said, what are the drives? But when so many people are appreciative and depend on being able to come, or it's very hard to say, okay, we're closing. Like, I can't do this anymore.
Oh, it's hard.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, they have a saying in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
TS. You know what that stands for?
I do know what that stands for. Tough shit. But I don't want to say that. That's not...
You don't have to say it. You have to face it. You know, about 4 years ago...
Face which part is the tough shit that I have to face? That I face, the part that I'm complaining about, or the part that it's too bad for them?
That is not a consideration. It's too bad for them. I mean, it is, but it's the last on the list.
Why?
Because if you're not taking care of yourself and functioning in a place that you cherish yourself from, that you can grow from, you're an artist. You don't do the same thing day after day after day. Every new art is this is fundamental to your character.
It is.
You know, you're not going to sing the same song every day. And when it's done, it's done. It's done. So be an artist. And it's not free. It is not free.
What do you mean it's not free?
You have to accept the responsibility that in making these decisions, whichever way you go.
That I'll hurt people or...
Yeah. Yeah, you will. You'll get complaints, you'll get misunderstandings, you'll get whatever you get.
Mm-hmm.
It's a package deal. It's a package deal.
A special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
May your life go well.
Thank you for the teaching. Thank you.
I still can't say it. So shan chi.
It's a German word. It's not.
And I'm not just German.
Oh, okay.
I think I used to jump into situations and not worrying about whether the road is straight or curved or how life is, you know. That's how I came here. That's how I faced the past of my family. But lately I thought that that is not enough, just jumping in, because when I got sick, I realized you just have to deal with it, right? And the old saying by Shantideva, I'm quoting, is you try to do your best, why worry about everything else, right? So the question is then, how do you do your best? And we have the guidelines, the ethic, you know, the ethical, the precepts. But I also found that I cannot just follow it as a rule. So what do you do then? And there are so many different possibilities, right? And when I was sick, what I just did was I went for a walk, and something came up in me, and that's what I followed. And you have to just trust yourself and do your best. And that's all what I can say.
I honor that. May your life go well.
Thanks for teaching.
So Sanji. Yes, the microphone. So Sanji. My wife and I play this game, worst case scenario, where sometimes she'll have anxiety, and this helps us create harmony. She'll have an anxiety if we're, say, out for coffee and our daughter's at home alone. And so she feels anxiety rise, and she plays worst case scenario, and we come up with worst case scenarios. What's the worst thing that happened? Like the house burned down, or she fell off a chair and hit her head and she's bleeding out, right? Worst case scenario. I play that with my wife. It helps us in some ways. But what I've realized in my own life is stepping deeper into the path, I'm playing worst case scenario in my head.
In relation to the path?
In relation to the path.
Can you say more?
It feels like I'll trade everything that's been built, the castles in the sand, or the sand castles.
Yeah. It's an interesting question and a common fear. I'm just going to speak from my own experience. So I practiced for a number of years working and doing as within those limitations of family and a child and consuming work.
But I'm even thinking everything I've built here and here. Yeah.
I understand. And I had desires to come here or some equivalent to go more, but I recognized that it wasn't the time or place. But I aimed. And what I realized when that time came was I was no longer in the same place as when I started and had those fears that I'll lose everything, I won't have a source of income, how will my wife and I survive if we come to the monastery, because she can't be on schedule, and so there's costs involved, and we had to pay as a resident at that time. But I understood what I wanted to do. And it's not, I mean, you have to understand what you want. And you have to look at the circumstances and continue to look at the circumstances with that in the back of your mind and working towards that. while at the same time taking care of your present business. So, you know, I have a formulaic way of looking at it, which works for me. I know what I want. I'm light years away from it. I have to survive. I have to eat. I have to work. I have to raise a child. Do those things. Because that's what I have to over the short term to accomplish what I want over the long term. And I'm not even saying the long term is better than the short term, but, you know, there's a singular goal, if you will. But as I go along, I look for a bridge from the short term to the long term. And it's there. So you work the situation. You have fears. You don't know. You never know, ultimately. And you play with it. You see. And as you do that, you change. Your circumstances change. Your mind changes. How you understand risk changes. You may decide that that goal is not appropriate because things have changed. Or your child needs this and that. And you can't, you know, your attention has to be there, et cetera, et cetera. And just let it unroll. Be natural. Don't force anything. And just like you've known when to do the switches that you've done in life. There wasn't some birdie in the sky telling you. You knew. And you slowly recognized until you got to that point where, I mean, you just didn't wake up one day and go, you saw what was happening. This has happened several times to you in several ways. It's also the way I fell in love, by the way. So to trust that and to be as comfortable as you can with the discomfort of not knowing. You trust that too. And then you take it as it comes. May your life go well.
Thank you for teaching.
Shu Sanchi. Taisho spoke earlier about that energy of, like, I think my side is the right side, and I'm angry with somebody who has a different view, and just wanting to convince them that my view is right. And to, like, get rid of them if they don't agree. I struggle with that. Struggling with it right now. And I've had a lot of that energy that in my mind I've been directing towards you, and I don't want to hurt you. And I'm also in a lot of pain. And I don't know how to move forward well.
I don't know either. And I really want to be careful that I truly don't know. And I'm not sure I'm the best person to advise you on this. But I would say keep the question open.
Thank you.
May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shu Sanchi. I came here with a bunch of knots in my spirit and in my life. And I find myself as this being the last session that I will do for a while. reaching for contrast. I'd hardly see, you know, the growing pains of the world as the world being on fire, but as just a natural part of our human evolution, as we start to catch up to our technology and our spiritual education. So I'm about to start a business, right? A life coaching business. And I'm sort of struggling on how to fill the gap between me and those I serve, or the perceived gap there. Because I feel that on this curving road, as long as I'm in the middle of the path, that I'm going straight. But that's a weird one. It doesn't fit very well.
No.
Yeah.
Can you be with your discomfort?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you allow it?
Yeah.
And notice it?
Oh, as much as I'm capable?
Yeah, sure. It's true of all of us. That moment. And then in noticing it, more subtly, let it be as you enter into the specifics of the situation. Just let it be. I mean, although you're speaking in general terms, it's natural for anyone at any point to feel uncomfortable in a given situation, relational situation. And so what I try and do is be open to my discomfort, acknowledge it, try not to let it rule me, not act weird out of it because, you know, I'm not feeling the way I'd like to feel, you know, or to this situation, this person, this whatever. And just do the best I can to be present. So being present means you're really paying attention and you're honoring the other person with your attention. Now, I know personally that when I do that, I tend to be silent. And that doesn't work.
Yeah.
People read, it's a blank slate, and people read all sorts of things into that, which I'm not feeling, but they're feeling. So I have to be responsible for that. So I have to respond in some way that holds them and holds me. Not respond in some way that pleases them, but that holds us both. So there are plenty of times in life I feel a little discomfort or whatever. But what I rely on is the most basic level of honesty that I can be at that moment. We just had such a moment. And that I trust. That I trust that there's some potential there to heal me and to offer healing. And acknowledge responsibility. That's what I can offer.
Thank you for your teaching.
May life go well.
Shosanchi, what is your original face?
My name is Hogan.
I'm not satisfied.
My name is Hogan.
How does your original face show up in this burning world?
Often I cry. And I vow. And I do my best, my very, very best, to come forth from that, to walk a path.
sometimes I wonder why we don't proselytize. Do you know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure. I mean, I know the obvious answer, which is that this is too hard to try and convince people to do this. They have to want to.
What I mean is, more and more, seeing the power of the Dharma and the depth of the suffering and how much it's transforming my life and wanting to offer. And we do, but you've got to get yourself to Zen Mountain Monastery or Fire Lotus Temple or find the podcast. There are ways. And yet I think, oh, there's so many beings who might turn towards the Dharma if someone reached out and offered it.
I'm very wary of disrespecting people. It feels important to respect karma. I'm nothing special. You're nothing special. You came here out of your life, out of your karma, if you will, but that has specific meaning in your life, as it does in mine. I have some sense of that, and I'll bet you have some sense of yours. But I have no right to say to someone else, without any indication that they're giving permission, what we call giving permission, or asking. And even then, what are they asking, or where is that coming from? To impose what I am judging is good for them and good for peace in the world on them. I don't have that right. I'm disrespecting them. They are a Buddha. They are responsible for themselves. You are responsible. I am responsible. And so, how do I walk that narrow line you're talking about? You know this, someone asks me a question, I respond from where they're coming from. If anything, I try, not always successfully, to give them less information, if that's what they're... And you know this. And if they ask another question, or they see something in the circumstances or in me or in whatever, then I encourage it. But they are responsible. How many thousands and thousands of people have come here for a Zen training weekend, heard the Dharma, be turned on by the Dharma, and they go where they go? We don't know where they go. They may go to another religious practice or center or whatever. We don't know. And you've also seen people 20 years later come back and say, now I'm ready. I trust that. The ones who don't come back, the ones who do, that is theirs. It's not mine. And when I try to make it mine, I create suffering. And boy, I do want to. So, my son, he's, I don't know, 8 years old. We go to Roshi Kaplow's in Santa Fe, that's where he was. He gives Jikai, gives me Jikai, which has a different intensity there, but still, Shikai's precepts. And he says to Sandy, 8 years old, want to do this? And Sandy says, sure, yeah, sure, of course, like most 8 years. And he gives him Shikai. Yeah, it's like my son was baptized if it was a different religion. So fucking what? So now he's 45 years old, 46, 47. I know people are laughing, but I don't understand why, but maybe he'll explain it later. And he's going to vote for Donald Trump.
You're in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Pennsylvania's part of the union. I beg your pardon.
No, I mean, that really, that matters.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I'm just like taking that in.
Yeah. And he lives his life as a tribe. Everything is family.
Mm-hmm.
You're either in or you're out. And although I'm part of family, I'm out because I'm not doing what he expects, demands, etc. And he says, why do you spend your whole life with a bunch of misfits and neurotics? And I say, these misfits and neurotics are exactly what this family is and what he meets at work and who he is. That doesn't go over too well. So actually don't say that to him because it won't help him. But I think that. So I'm just doing the best I can with my pitiful equipment. That's it. That's what I can do. But I really question, as you know, that I do the best I can. That's all I can do. And I have complete respect for each person's karma. Because they're responsible. Under all that, they're a Buddha.
I know, but don't you sometimes want to get in there and play around with it a little? It's like, that could be their karma too.
You know that's bullshit. And yes, I'm so tempted to sit down and say, Sandy,
I don't know that that's bullshit. I don't know that that's bullshit. We do influence each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
How?
In 100,000 ways.
Exactly. But one of the least effective is to say some equivalency of, you should do this practice, except in those cases where the person looks at you and says, knowing nothing about you, and says, do you have any ideas? And you might say, well, there's a monastery you might want to visit. You hear that story all the time. That's not proselytizing. That's saving all sentient beings. There's a permission there, a subtle permission. And there's risk. One time my sister asked me, she was suffering, and she said, I see you meditate. Can you teach me to meditate? So she sits in a chair. I give her the instruction. Very simple. And after about 5 minutes, she runs screaming from the room. She says, I'll never do that again. And she didn't. No guarantees, just doing the best we can.
Trusting karma is hard.
Yes, it is. But it's damn well earned.
And it's painful.
And it's painful. How painful do you think it is for me? How's this? My son says, everything you do here is narcissistic. You know what that feels like? And I can't say there isn't a small grain of truth somehow in that. I have an ego. But I know it's not. But I have no way to convince him. And it hurts. It hurts. And here I am.
Thank you for your teaching.
May your life go well. I think we've all seen, and I certainly know, and I suspect you know, that this is hard. It's really hard to be responsible for yourself and your karma. When I see my son, who was essentially raised in a Buddhist household, and knew many senior Buddhist, Zen Buddhist practitioners, models of people, and a few teachers. And where he is now is no direct reflection of that. Maybe an opposite. I mean, I don't know, made sense at the time. And I look back at my choices as my karma. And, you know, if I put myself back there, I don't know that I'd make any other choice. And the story's never over. I understand that. And it hurts. And it's mine. It is mine. I got that. And so that is yours too, your life. What you do matters. Hermit, coming here, not coming here. Following your heart, not following your heart. Not willing to discern what your heart is. Every bit of it and much more matters. And we are not given to know how it matters necessarily. We may get glimpses from time to time, but no more than that. But way beyond faith, what I know is you being here and doing this practice creates what I would call a joyful moment, life, opportunity, heart. I don't really have the words. In ripples that we just do not know, but do have a sense of. And we are responsible to do that when we take these vows. We're responsible to practice our own pain for the sake of others. And thus we take those vows. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming up. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing your life. May your life go well.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.